from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.
At the legislature today, the minimum wage could increase to $8.75 an hour by the year 2016 in a bill moving through the House this week. In the Senate, one member asked that committee agendas be announced 24 hours before a committee meeting to allow citizens time to attend. The move is rejected. These stories and more are coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. A congressional hearing brought federal lawmakers to Charleston today. They wanted to hear firsthand from state and local officials about what transpired after a chemical leak contaminated the drinking water for more than 300,000 West Virginians. As Ashton Mara reports, members of Congress told those gathered they would use the information to craft legislation at the federal level to prevent future spills, much like what's happening at the state capitol.
A two-hour hearing of the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure began with opening remarks. From witnesses, those remarks recounted their company's or agency's response immediately following the discovery of the leak. But for lawmakers, remarks were more focused on who was not present, Freedom Industries.
Mr. Chairman, there is an odor emanating from Freedom Industries, and it's not licorice. We cannot legislate morality into the billionaire corporate boardrooms where shell game playing abounds.
Their decision not to testify today compounds its gross misconduct and is an absolute affront to every person impacted by the spill.
First of all, it's just unconscionable that Freedom Industry could not have known about the leak, did not report the leak, and did not know how much the leak it happened. It's unconscionable to me to believe that.
Freedom President Gary Southern was invited to attend the hearing as a witness, but was not present. As questioning began, the one on the minds of almost every West Virginia American Water customer came to light through their representatives. Is the water safe? Congresswoman Shelley Moore Capito posed the question first to Jeff McIntyre, president of the water company, and next to Dr. Letitia Tierney, commissioner for the Bureau for Public Health.
Is the water safe to drink?
As a water company, we don't set the safe standards, but we are in compliance with all the standards set by the health-based agencies like the CDC, the West Virginia Bureau of Public Health, and we have been since the 13th of January. Yet I recognize the customer's fear associated with the smell of something in their water.
Everybody has a different definition of safe. As I used the example before, some people think it's safe to jump off the bridge on bridge day. I don't personally think that's safe. So everybody has a different definition. Am I confident in the science? I'm as confident as I can be, given what we had.
Her metaphor was lost, however, on Senator Manchin.
Do you understand they all sign a waiver?
Yes.
They sign a waiver of the danger to hold nobody responsible. We shouldn't have to sign a waiver to drink our water.
Still, the question persisted throughout the hearing, being avoided by most witnesses it was directed to. Committee Chairman Representative Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania.
This panel sitting here, nobody's willing to say that the water is safe. Categorically say it's safe. I'm not going to ask you again because I think everybody's going to dance around the question. And I don't know exactly why, but I suspect the main reason why is everybody's afraid they're going to get sued.
Schuster moved the questioning forward, asking McIntyre to again explain why the water intake hadn't simply been shut off, avoiding the contamination.
And I'd like people to try to envision what it would be like to be in a community where there is no water in the pipes and you have no sanitation. Where do you go to the bathroom? Hospitals, if there's a fire in the hospital, how do you protect those patients? Those were all critical thought processes that we had to go through. And to extend, you can't just turn it back on. Now you have to introduce that water very carefully into a system that's full of air. And if you've ever seen your tap at home with air in it in the bathroom, when you turn it on, that explosive nature, there would have been pipe breaks all over the system that would have had to been fixed and then remedied and then boil waters and move out and out and out. Conservatively, we believe that it would have been more than a month to turn the water system back on for all customers. We believe we made the right decision to protect this community.
Public health was a major concern, particularly the health effects seen in area schools over the past week.
Here, a full month after the incident started, there have been reports of fumes in the schools. Are you helping? What are those fumes coming from, first of all?
I don't know, sir. I can't answer that question. The National Guard has been the agency that's been actively involved in sampling the schools, and all I can tell you is the sample results that I've seen before and after these events are at non-detect levels, but I can't speak to those events. I don't have any direct knowledge.
Director of the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Jimmy Jeanette, testified National Guard teams were finding issues concentrated in school cafeterias where large amounts of water were being heated to wash dishes. But Jeanette, like McIntyre, urged schools were all testing well below the CDC-recommended health standard. Mike Dorsey with the State Department of Environmental Protection testified remediation efforts have been underway since day one, but have been slowed by what he called the necessary investigations of multiple agencies on site. Johnny Banks, lead investigator for the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, brought a photograph of the two holes his team found after inspecting the bottom of the leaking tank from the inside. Now, he says, they are working with other investigators on the protocols for removing that section of the tank before remediation can continue. He expects that to be completed within the week. Dorsey assured lawmakers even though their efforts had been stalled, the chemical was still completely contained and the raw water from the river had not tested at detectable levels for MCHM since mid-January. Through all the remarks and questioning, lawmakers were focused on restoring the public's trust in the water. Some have proposed doing so through legislation designed to prevent future spills. Senator Manchin introduced legislation in the Senate last month regulating above-ground storage facilities, and Representative Capito plans to introduce her version of the legislation tonight in the House. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara.
Today at the Capitol, the Senate passed two bills, while the House passed three. The House is closer to voting on a bill to increase the minimum wage, while the Senate introduced a bill that would help care for aging veterans and a resolution that would make agendas available sooner to the public. Aaron Payne pulled double duty today and reports from both the Senate and the House.
Senate Resolution 12 would require bills be put on committee agendas 24 hours prior to the meeting. The resolution was rejected with a voice vote. Senator Chris Walters asked for a roll call vote to reconsider the resolution, saying that it would allow them to better serve their constituents, allowing time for their voices on specific legislation to be heard.
As a senator, I try to do everything I can to read the bills, to understand the bills, to be able to deliberate on them and to study legislation. Last week, there was a bill that was introduced on the blue list of this floor. And then an hour later in committee, it was on the committee to be discussed. That bill is over 20 pages long. I had no ability through that time to know that it was on that committee's agenda and then to really study the bill, to be able to deliberate on it, to be able to make phone calls to ask about unintentional consequences, to be able to bring in an expert to speak to it or against the bill.
However, the majority of the Senate did not agree as the resolution was rejected 11 to 23. Introduced in the Senate today was Bill 523, which would provide funding for an additional state veteran skilled nursing facility in Beckley. The facility would be adjacent to the Jackie Withrow Hospital and would house up to 120 veterans. Senator Mike Green says the bill is a fitting way to say thank you to those who served in the military.
The nursing facility would help those veterans as they return home, and it'll be a way for us to say thank you for your service. We need to be there not just for when the ceremonial return, but to support them when cheering fades and the everyday life trials that they face begin.
The bill will be referenced to the Senate Military Committee.
Meanwhile, over in the House, there were three bills up for vote, while four bills were put on first reading. Among those bills was one relating to increasing the minimum wage in West Virginia.
Currently, the minimum wage is $7.25 per hour in West Virginia. As introduced, House Bill 4283 would increase the minimum wage by 60 cents to $7.85 per hour by July of this year, and then add a 40-cent increase to $8.25 per hour by July of 2015. The House Finance Committee amended the bill to push the increases back to January of 2015 and January of 2016. The committee determined the delay was needed so that businesses could have time to take the changes into account with their budgets. The minimum wage would raise to $8.75 by 2016. The chairman of the Finance Committee, Brent Boggs, says that the introduced version of the bill didn't go far enough to provide relief for families relying on minimum wage jobs.
Well, the need is great, and I know that there's always going to be issues about cost to businesses. I mean, certainly that goes without saying, but if you look at the overall, this will probably affect 100,000 West Virginia workers, many of whom there's no way under the current minimum wage they're able to get by. And even by raising it 75 cents in 15 and 75 cents in 16, it still is a far cry from being the kind of a wage that's livable for a family and to support a family.
The bill will be up for vote on Wednesday. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne at the Capitol.
In a moment, we'll meet the new Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 516, to provide quick and efficient medical treatment to an injured worker. Senate Bill 522, to provide quick and efficient delivery of medical benefits to injured workers. Senate Bill 523, to provide for the construction of an additional 120-bed state veteran skilled nursing facility to be located in Beckley. Senate Bill 527, to prohibit the sale of beer and wine at self-scan registers. Senate Bill 530, to establish separate standards of performance for carbon dioxide emissions from existing coal-fired electronic generating units and natural gas-fired electric generating units. Senate Bill 531, to promote the professionalism of funeral directors by requiring either an undergraduate bachelor's degree and 1 year of mortuary college or a bachelor's degree in funeral science as educational requirements. The bill also prohibits a funeral director who is currently on probation or other disciplinary action from supervising an apprentice. And Senate Bill 532, to allow West Virginia National Guard firefighters to become civilian firefighters for the West Virginia Air National Guard. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 90, creating a criminal offense for interfering with or preventing a person from calling for the assistance of emergency service personnel. Senate Bill 403, regulating the importation and possession of certain injurious aquatic species. Senate Bill 454, to define the owner of a dam for the purposes of the Dam Control Act. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 458, to impose certain additional fees in circuit courts to fund civil legal services for low-income persons. And Senate Bill 515, to repeal an obsolete section of the state code relating to state aid for students of veterinary medicine. Our guest tonight was appointed Secretary of the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources on July 1st, 2013. Karen Bowling began her career as an emergency room nurse in a rural hospital in Wyoming County. She became the CEO of Raleigh General Hospital in Beckley in 2001. A native of Mullins, Bowling graduated from Bluefield State College with an associate degree in nursing. She continued her education at West Virginia University, where she received a Bachelor of Science in Nursing and a Master of Science in Primary Healthcare Nursing. Secretary Bowling, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. You were at the hearing today. As you think about it, what was your takeaway from it?
Beth, I think the main takeaway is the importance of this issue and the fact that the congressional delegation and the committee was here in West Virginia listening to West Virginians. And I think that's extremely important. It's very, I think, critical that everyone understand the position that the people in West Virginia have been placed in. I mean, this has been a crisis for us. We've received so much support from, obviously, Congressman Rahal and Congresswoman Capito, as well as Senator Manchin and Senator Rockefeller. And I think the fact that the hearing was here today made this apparent to the people in the state of West Virginia that they were there to listen. And so I appreciated the fact that the hearing was held here in West Virginia and we were given an opportunity to speak. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the water is safe to drink?
That's an interesting question. I believe that, as indicated by all the experts, that the water is protective of the public health. I mean, we've been told by the CDC and health officials that, you know, it's fine to drink the water. It's fine to bathe in the water. It's fine to use the water. But I understand the concerns of the citizens. I mean, I when you place yourself in their position because of the fact there was little known about this chemical and because all of this is a calculation, a scientific calculation, I understand that, you know, everyone doesn't feel confident. And our goal, really, because we worry about the health and well-being of the people here in the state of West Virginia, is to restore that confidence. And I think the challenge is using the word safe. You know, when we talk about we can use the water and it's acceptable to use the water, it's really, I think, a very challenging word to use in this situation, because the experts from the CDC continue to use the word protective of the public health. And I think that's the word that seems to resonate with us, you know, as the public officials.
So it's really up to us to decide how far we want to go in using this water.
I would agree with that, but also say that I'm careful of that, because I think that people take that and say that we don't care, that, you know, that we're not interested in how they feel. And, you know, just as a nurse, I'm very interested in how people feel. I understand that this is an area of concern. And so I think that we continue to be confident in the science. You know, we use the CDC, we use the experts. The calculation was certainly, you know, put together based on, you know, a panel that, you know, we were told by the CDC had 200 years of toxicology experience. And so I think we feel confident in that information because we understand it. Along the same lines, there, you know, obviously are many people who are saying to themselves, but this is my child and this is my elderly parent, and so what should I do? And I think that, you know, that's where the challenge is yes, it is a decision that people have to make, but our job is really to help them to make that decision by providing as much information as possible and being transparent in that.
During the news briefings during this crisis, you were careful not to attribute any illnesses to the chemical leak. What can you tell us now? Have there been illnesses that are directly attributable to this chemical?
Let me tell you what's going on in that arena. We have epidemiologists from our public health as well as the CDC who are doing a very extensive chart review of individuals who identified when they presented to the emergency room or presented to a physician or anyone that reported the information to us. And that chart review is an effort to try to understand all of the things that occurred. We don't know at this point in time because we're not finished with that evaluation. Now, once we are finished with that evaluation, the epidemiologists will work together to create findings. And those findings will be public findings. Whether or not they can attribute some sort of causation, I can't say because I'm not part of that team. But what I can say is that as they look to this, we will be able to provide information about what that chart review has indicated, the types of symptoms that people present with, and, you know, that will also give us a good perspective about, all right, what is our plan going forward? How do we need to make sure that we're looking at what impact this may or may not have going forward? And so I'm very, very optimistic that we'll get a good information, baseline information from that chart review that will help us plan going forward in a systematic way.
As you continue to contemplate this event, do you still have questions in your mind that you want answers to that you haven't gotten answers to yet?
I think the main question that that we all need to be thinking about is what could we have done to prevent this? And I think that that's what, why we have people in the legislature, the governor's office, as well as on the federal level saying, what do we need to do differently to ensure this doesn't happen again? And I think those are the main questions. As far as Freedom Industry goes, obviously today they were absent from the hearing. There should be questions to them. But I think from our perspective, it's more a matter of doing an analysis of really specifically what did we learn, what do we need to do differently going forward, and what kind of legislation is really going to be necessary. And I know there are versions of legislation out there to help us to ensure that this doesn't happen again, because from a public health perspective, we are responsible for safe drinking water. And I can tell you that the individuals in public health take that very serious.
Let me move on, because we've got just a short time left. You are a new secretary, and this is a big job. What's your philosophy of overseeing the largest agency in state government? How do you take that on? Where do you start?
I think you start with, I care about the people in the state of West Virginia. I'm from West Virginia. I believe there are opportunities for us to look across every bureau and learn to do things a little bit differently. How can we integrate? How can we collaborate? How can we work more together to ensure public policy is focused on population health? You know, our job in really Department of Health and Human Resources is to think about what can we do differently to move the needle on some of the health statistics in our state. Mm-hmm. And one reason that I was very honored to take on this position is because I think there are opportunities to engage stakeholders, to learn from each other, and to make things better for the people here in the state of West Virginia.
What kind of opportunities?
You know, one of the main opportunities, I think, something I'm already learning, is really collaboration between the three branches of government, the judicial branch, the executive branch, the legislative branch. How can we pull the resources together to make changes, such as an initiative we're working on, it's called the Three Branch Institute, to improve the emotional and social well-being of our foster children. That's just one area that I think is an opportunity, as well as a health innovation collaborative that we put together to pull in people from all over the state. One thing that I've learned about West Virginia, we're resilient, we help each other, and we do try to think about how we can make changes that are going to make things better. What we're doing in the northern panhandle may very well be something we need to duplicate in the southern part of the state, but we don't know about it yet. So the collaborative is a way for us to think about learning from each other, different parts of the state. Although there might be geographic differences, there may be some very good policy decisions that we can make to improve the health and well-being of our citizens.
Is DHHR too big? Should it be split in half?
Everyone's heard my opinion on that. Absolutely, we're not too big. There are huge corporations in our country that are managed very effectively. I believe that this organization can be managed very effectively. We need to improve our efficiencies, obviously. We need to do a lot of vertical and horizontal integration to make sure that, you know, we are good in terms of how we go about creating policy and implementing changes, but we have an opportunity to do that.
And we will leave it there. Karen Bowling, Secretary of DHHR, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4452, to make it illegal for anyone to photograph a corpse except for certain legitimate purposes. House Bill 4454, to permit the sale of wine and other legal beverages by private clubs and the sale of wine by private bed and breakfasts, private wine restaurants, or private wine spa licensees between the hours of 10:30 a.m. and 1 o'clock p.m. on Sundays. And House Bill 4455, to permit the retail sale of wine by licensed wineries and farm wineries between the hours of 10:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Sundays, and to permit the retail sale of alcoholic liquors manufactured and sold by licensed distilleries and mini distilleries on Sundays beginning at 10:30 a.m. On second reading, the amendment stage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 4208, to control certain drugs, including synthetic hallucinogens, by better conforming the state lists of controlled substances to the federal lists. House Bill 4283, raising the minimum wage to $8 an hour on January 1, 2015, and to $8.75 an hour on January 1, 2016. House Bill 4414, relating to the solicitation of public employees by a candidate for an elective office, and to clarify that electronic communications is a form of contact. And House Bill 4421, to allow the lottery to pay prizes utilizing electronic funds transfer. And this has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow is Women's Day at the Legislature. We'll talk with two members of the West Virginia Women's Commission, Tara Martinez, the Executive Director, and Barbara Kyle, the Chair of the Women's Commission. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org. And hear podcasts of the Legislature Today available on our website, wvpublic.org. You can also watch it on West Virginia PBS, weeknights at 6:30 and also at 11:30.